Please be seated. There's a new and grim commemoration in this city on September 22nd to 24th every year. We remember September 22nd through 24th in 1906 for the horrible days of the Atlanta race massacre. The estimate is 25 to 30, but maybe more. Black people were murdered by rampaging mobs of white men. And it was covered up in our mainstream media and our history books for a very long time. It is very important to remember. Our bells will toll after this service, and bells will toll all over the city at about the same time this afternoon for that commemoration. We must remember how easy it is to be caught up in the political expediency of hate and of demonizing another. Just a twist of truth, it might seem. How easy it is to unleash something that cannot then be stopped. How easy to fall for the pursuit of power through hate and violence, remember that massacre happened in the service of an election. It was called public safety. How powerful the words and silences of the press, how quickly morality and wisdom can be sucked out of the air, extinguished. A convicting memory for our vigilance, a memory we can hold because it is our practice as Christian people to comb over old stories in search of wisdom for our living today. One of the things you look for in biblical scholarship is why something was written, why we remember something. Who would have heard it or read it? Who might have written it or edited what we have today? Who was written for or translated over time? What are all of the influences? Who would have said the words out loud? What would that have meant? So we just had that illustrated in the Proverbs reading. Whenever readings like that and other ones like it come up, I take note of who will be reading it, because there are certain people you probably don't want reading those lines, because we would all not be able to stop laughing, right? It matters what voice says those words. It sounds different if it is a man or a woman. You can imagine what it would sound like if different kinds of people stood up there and read, "A good wife who can find," right? So this is an acrostic poem in Hebrew. Each phrase starts with the next letter in the Hebrew alphabet, so it'd be the equivalent of having a 26-line poem for the American, for our English alphabet. And so that would mean that if we did it, some phrases would start with Q or with X or with Z. So I'm just saying that to say there might be some filler in there to make it work, even though we can't quite see that in the Hebrew, in what we're reading. So the implications of that are that word that is used for wife, that word could also be translated as woman, and some Bibles do. The New International Version uses woman. You can imagine that that would read differently. You could also translate capable as good or strong. You can imagine, again, why we have wife in the translation that we read today, the New Revised Standard, which we usually read, because the next phrase says husband, that a husband would have a wife. You can see how they made that choice, right? It fits. Well, there's a new revised standard, because of course there is, right? There used to just be the revised standard. And it translates it this way: a strong woman. Other translations say a virtuous woman. You might have heard that. So decisions were made, and I think some very interesting ones in the version that we read in the NRSV, which in many other passages is really by far the best translation possible. So woman wisdom in Proverbs is first presented to us in chapter 1. Proverbs is a guide to young leaders. I've said this before and I'll keep saying it because it's so interesting. At the beginning of Proverbs, it says this is for the counsel of young men who will have power. This is school. This is school for not little children, school for maybe late teenagers, early 20s, to get ready for the power that will be theirs, the influence that they will have. And isn't it interesting that as this teacher organizes his school, what does he write? But from the beginning in chapter 1 and then the conclusion that we have today, wisdom, a woman, the wisdom of a woman. Proverbs is a little bit unique. It's one of the few places where you see she over and over and over again. It's worth noting because that's not common in the Bible. But again, these young men are preparing for lives of enormous responsibility and authority. And woman wisdom is what the teacher says they are taught to seek out and love. It is beautiful poetry. Now, one of the follies of this time and place on the planet that we find ourselves in is that we can look at the ancients as just so different than us, probably worse, so much less evolved in some way. But we actually find, I think, looking at the Bible, that there are people very much like us, psychologically, politically, socially. They are as petty and small and insecure as we are, as triumphant and self-sacrificing and seeking and earnest as we are. And if we look closely sometimes, values so much more righteous than we can imagine in our time, or understood, or at least written as wisdom, the result of wisdom. And that's where we stand today in the wisdom literature. And James in the New Testament, some say, is a version of wisdom literature, the only wisdom literature we get in the New Testament. And the mark of wisdom literature in the Bible is that it tells us about things to do, actions, the stuff we like at St. Luke's, behaviors, as opposed to a story or a set of beliefs or ways to orient ourselves to the world, stuff you're supposed to do. As specific as that, kindness, gentleness, and joy are marks of wisdom. So back to Proverbs and that woman who must be very tired, I think. It sounds like a very long day of first-class productivity. I'm sure others of you might have thought the same while you were listening to that. The coffee is ready before everyone wakes up, and she's also had hers. She has meditated, she has worked out, she has done her morning pages, she has said her prayers. She has instructed those who tend her household, which I think translates today to a round of emails about school and doctor's appointments and after-school activities. And if you work in a kind of business where people start in a time zone before you, you've done that stuff as well. And then you're on your way to the next set of tasks. She runs her own business, and she's probably exquisitely dressed and has a really great hairdo, of course, as well. And she is in good spirits all day long, it seems, and is sought out for her kindness, charity, and wisdom. And not because her husband is any less able, it seems to say. He too sits at the gates where mercy is handed out. He is wise, where those who need help, those in conflict, come for wisdom. He has made a good life, as these young men reading must have understood how to do by chapter 30 of Proverbs. But this chapter is about her. And with their great resources, they administer their responsibilities well. It is a timely reading. Proverbs is not telling us a story. It is describing virtuous living. And the wisdom literature in particular is written for people who have resources. Let me say that again. It is for us, those who impact others by their decisions, different than the enslaved in Egypt and the wandering in the desert, right? Different. Unlike the disciples in Mark who were fisher people, they are like day laborers. Proverbs is for the voter, the participant, the maker in society, for the American, where by default as an American, our wealth as a people and individuals is so disproportionate to the very real poverty of so many people on this planet, which means hunger is part of their daily reality. We are collectively and personally the wealthy, people whose decisions impact so many others. Proverbs and James are written for us. Mark, on the other hand, is very scrappy today. The disciples are walking with Jesus. Who knows what they're wearing, right? And what they did before they got the day started. And there must have been a lull in the Jesus action because they are fighting amongst themselves loudly enough that Jesus hears about who is doing the best job at discipling. Who is just killing it is basically what they're doing. And Jesus hears them. Envy, pride, James might say. Today we might call that insecurity or inadequacy or imposter syndrome, right? Just messing around. Who is the greatest? The disciples seem to be saying something like this: if we have actually found the one, the Messiah, how fortunate are we? How do we ride these coattails to glory? If we were a different kind of church, if we were petty and we're not, it might look like, as it does in James, how in this Christian community am I honored? Am I honored enough? Who sees my faith or my need to be honored here? Who among us is really good at this, and how do we mark that? The twist in it all seems to be that faith and wisdom in this world is winsome. It is light. It moves through the world like an energy and is reflected in us, or we can reflect it. We can reveal it in ourselves. It is not to be grasped and held tight. It is not a pin for your lapel. It is not a permanent fixture to be used for proof of good character. It gets up in the morning and prepares for the very real day ahead, the truth of it. It will require labor and adjustment, a wise calibration of the resources and needs at hand, and leans on the side of mercy, the charity that the world cannot give, will never give enough for you or for the truly desperate. But our faith is that it has been given to us, pressed down and running over. It is ours from God. This is our knowing, given to us from God before we existed. And if you wonder if you were wearing it right, it is the lightness of love that is not demanding, not changing, but healing and soothing for us and for us to offer, because we receive it from God, our Creator, who has faith in you, for you. And with this faith, this mercy, we act in faith and mercy. Who is the greatest among us? The one whose gift of faith calls us to faith. And Jesus always starts at the very least, the one who would never guess that they would be chosen. The tough thing about faith is that if you have control over your life, or if you think you do, if you have what you need, and even more than you think you need, there isn't really that much faith required. You don't get much practice, do you? But if you have little, faith is essential. If you are actually little, if you're a child, you have to have a lot of faith in a lot of us to just get through, don't you? You rely on us. Most of us encounter that kind of need when we lose something, when we lose someone close to us, when we lose our health, face a health crisis. It occurs to us then that we control so little. We see this faith more regularly in people who are actually vulnerable all the time. People who stand in lines because they are hungry or because they are refugees, or if you find yourself in court or in jail, which is why the Bible uses those examples as illustrations. In some ways, in those situations, your safety, your well-being, requires faith in our systems and the very real people who have power over your life, power to give you what you require. And I guess we have some faith, all the rest of us, I won't write us completely off. I guess we have faith in drivers if we are out on that road, right? The wisdom of engineers and traffic light schedules, and maybe of builders and food production workers. We have some faith. We take risk all the time. And all of us here, we respect the hour that we have set aside to be together. You have faith in us that you're going to get to your lunch today. There is some faith woven into the interactions of our day-to-day, faith and risk and need, faith in small things to build the muscles of faith in the greatest things, God's promise of God's love and mercy for you. And the Bible today says wisdom. And these ancient texts give wisdom a gender. Wisdom is a woman, Sophia in the Greek, challenging what we might think the ancient Near East was like, challenging us when we consider the world of Jesus' imagination as different than ours, especially for the most fundamentalist traditions of Christianity that we have in this country, formed in a very particular moment in our history, interpreting things with a very particular agenda. Christianity is so much more wild and interesting and relevant and revolutionary than that. A strong woman who can find. It seems to be saying to these young leaders, go get you a strong wife. Sort of does seem to say that. But it says to women, you are capable of anything you want. God has made you this way. And in this world of envy and power and violence and cruelty, which acted upon the body of our Jesus, and he tells us that today, that in this city in public in 1906, the year people first sat in this room, then and now, seek wisdom and mercy and justice. Notice our lives are a network of faith, dependent upon one another, and let us be counted worthy of the trust of our citizenship. For God cares about our days and cares for those who require our mercy, which is the truest test of our faith.